I think we're finally moving in the right direction. We've got to get through the next federal election. Otherwise, we're going to spend 20 years trying to build a nuclear reactor for $50 billion, and then we'll build three of them, so $150 billion. You know, we're going to waste two more decades. Delay, denial, disinformation.
Welcome to The Green Away. I'm your host, Rosemary Petrus, Senior Journalist at FS Sustainability. We are recording on Gadigal land. We pay our respects to traditional custodians of country and elders past, present and emerging. Today, we hear from Tim Buckley, Founder and Director of Climate Energy Finance. Welcome to the podcast, Tim.
Thank you very much for having me, Rosemary.
You founded Climate Energy Finance. For those who might not have heard of it, can you tell us a bit about what you do? What kind of research do you do there?
Certainly. So we founded in 2022. The logic is to leverage the really important financial sector. At the end of the day, people talk about government policy, the need for environmentalists and the need for corporates to act. But the reality is we need money, a huge amount of money to actually drive and fund the energy transformation system globally. So I'm trying to leverage my knowledge of finance. So Climate Energy Finance is a public interest think tank. And so we look to mobilize capital at the speed and scale required by the climate science. And we're fully funded by philanthropy. So I have no conflicts of interest, which is really important. My background is in Citigroup. I was managing director, head of research at Citi for many, many years. And all I did was manage conflicts of interest. So I'm pleased to declare I have no conflicts of interest. We work in what we consider to be the public national interest.
Amazing. Okay. So the federal budget was handed down last week. Are you satisfied with the outcome?
I think from the climate perspective, from the reorientation of the Australian economy, it is excellent. It obviously has a lot of other issues, and I think the Treasurer and the Finance Minister were busy juggling all sorts of priorities, whether it's cost of living, whether it's inflation, whether it's a housing crisis, whether it's biodiversity, whether it's trying to rebuild First Nations inclusion. All of those, I'll leave them outside of my comments. My comments are about the energy transformation and the climate science. And from that perspective, Prime Minister Albanese has set forward a vision for Australia last month with his Future Made in Australia. And Treasurer Chalmers last week articulated a strategy and, more importantly, money to support that strategy and to implement it at the speed and scale required. So all up, there was upwards of $22 billion of budget support to drive down the cost of renewable energy, to drive down the cost of zero emissions energy solutions, to reindustrialize the Australian economy, and to show that and to reskill the population, the workforce. Yeah. So from all of those perspectives, there was a lot of really good news. And at the end of the day, Australia is a massive fossil fuel exporter. So it is going to take a massive concerted effort to actually reorient our economy to a more sustainable future.
What areas do you think the government needs to do better on when it comes to the global energy transition?
The speed of approvals has been a real stumbling block. We've heard Energy and Climate Minister Chris Bowen announce his capacity investment scheme last year. That is really, really ambitious to mobilise 32 gigawatts of firmed renewable energy over the next 4 years. But at the end of the day, if we don't actually get government approvals, we can't actually build the 32 gigawatts. And so a lot of industry and a lot of investors are really frustrated about the ridiculous speed or snail's pace of approvals. I'm sitting in Sydney. New South Wales has one of the slowest approval rates in Australia when it comes to approving new wind, new solar, new battery projects. And when it takes you 10 years to get an approval for a wind farm, that is going to absolutely undermine the delivery of the decarbonisation. But it also undermines the cost of living. Well, it adds to the cost of living pressures, because the only way you actually permanently reduce energy prices is to increase supply. And so the government has said they're going to invest an extra $100, $200 million in staffing up the approval system. So it's not about just waving it through. It's about doing thorough, fast approvals, and a fast no is just as important as a considered yes, but you can't get either of those if you don't actually have the right staff in place. I do think we need to have a bit of a clean out of the approvals process. The department is staffed by, particularly here in New South Wales, way too many people that have worked in the fossil fuel industry. So they love approving coal mines. They hate approving wind farms. It's almost like the shadow treasurer just hates wind farms. And so ultimately he'll do anything he can to undermine it. We need a positive strategy. We have a climate crisis. We have an energy crisis. We have a cost of living crisis. And fast, thorough approvals is a brilliant way to actually deliver on solutions to all of those.
In your opinion, was what's in the budget for approvals sufficient?
There's always the issue that we are a federation. So we have federal government, we have state government. So it's all very well the federal government can expedite federal approvals, and the EPBC Act clarification is really important to that. They've been dragging their feet on that now for 2 years. So we need the federal government to move, but we also need them to actually incentivise and encourage the states to respond. As I mentioned, the state of New South Wales takes a decade to approve a wind farm. That is just ludicrous. It is, in my view, criminal, because it's really undermining any ability of the state to deliver on its new Net Zero Act, which was passed with bipartisan support. But at the end of the day, if Minister Bowen's able to actually offer the massive carrot of the capacity investment scheme, and then he's able to actually spur interstate competition. In other words, he will incentivize new projects in Queensland, Victoria, South Australia, New South Wales, and whoever actually accelerates and accepts the tenders, then they get the carrot. So hopefully it'll incentivize New South Wales to actually act in alignment with the science, to act in alignment with the Climate Act that they've actually passed 5 months ago.
And last week was Sydney's first Climate Week. I'm sure you were very busy. What events did you attend? What was the mood on the ground?
It's actually brilliant. I actually went to the first Climate Action Week, well, one of the first in New York about a decade ago. And I happened to be there for a conference. And so I went to the march, and there were 300,000 people.
Wow.
Marching the streets of New York. It was amazing. And every different institution, environmental group was there, all sorts of, and it was just amazing to walk down the main street of New York with 300,000 people. Now, not quite that magnitude here in Sydney, but there was overwhelmed. Many of the events were booked out, and so that's a great endorsement. Probably my favourite event was, in fact, on green iron, which to me is a $100 billion export opportunity a year for Australia. It's only going to happen if we have concerted federal-state action and collaboration with our major trade partners. So it was brilliant to have five or six practitioners in the sector, one an expert on Korea, another an expert on Japan, another looking at the technology, and another one looking at the policy requirements, another one looking at the whole effectively political landscape, talking about green energy statecraft and the need to get away from the idea that this is just going to happen without a concerted government, private, international cooperation, when we're talking about totally reorienting the entire or the Asian steel supply chain. That is going to take huge, huge amounts of investment. And we saw some very good steps in that direction from the federal budget. And we're certainly seeing our trade partners starting to step up and look at the opportunities and the need. If Japan, Korea, China are to decarbonize their economies, Australia can play an absolutely key lead role in facilitating that by exporting embodied decarbonization. So rather than exporting Japan, China and Korea our coking coal, exporting our iron ore, we could actually do the value add, use our wind and solar in Australia and export green iron, and that can probably reduce the steel supply chain emissions intensity by maybe 50%. So a huge step forward.
And you yourself sat on a few panels there. What were those sessions on?
I was in a panel last week where there were about 100 startup investors And that was really interesting to see the scope and breadth of technology innovations there. A lot of them actually had an agricultural bias, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. In Australia, we think our farmers are sacrosanct and we shouldn't touch them, and the politicians don't go anywhere near anything that might affect the farmers for fear of a voter backlash. But and that's not to downplay the importance of farmers. They're critical for our food security and for managing huge mm-hmm. parts of our economy. But what it really ignores is that they can actually be a key part of the solution. They're mm-hmm. not a problem. They're a core part of the solution, like whether it's soil sequestration, whether it's reducing the methane emissions of our livestock. There are enormous solutions there. We need to actually embrace that. We need to have the right price signal for it. And it was really interesting to see really young, inspiring technology disruptors rolling mm-hmm. out and illustrating new technologies that could really take hold in Australia, and we could leverage them, and to see investors supporting them. So that was probably the mm-hmm. most interesting forum I went to.
And on that note, what were the biggest takeaways for the finance industry from Sydney's Climate Week?
I think the number one takeaway is that we really need a price on carbon. In Australia, mm-hmm. that's pretty toxic. We've had a decade of climate wars. We've got the federal opposition trying to reignite the climate wars. But where the federal budget last week really put an emphasis on was the need for international collaboration. Now, we need to do that with global technology leaders, because at the end of the day, Australia can't do it all on our own. We're a relatively small country. But as mm-hmm. I would reframe it, we're the number one iron ore exporter in the world. We're not small. We're 50% of the world's iron ore. We're 50% of the world's coking coal. We're 50% of the world's exports of lithium. Australia mm-hmm. plays number one in the world. But how do we actually galvanize embodied decarbonization in our key exports? We need a price on carbon. And mm-hmm. so the idea of a North Asian CBAM, I think, is going to be a critical development to leverage off the ambition of the EU CBAM and to provide a price signal for Australia's key exporters and for Asia's key importers. As I mentioned, green iron is a $100 billion a year value uplift opportunity for Australia. But as BHP regularly says to me, we can only do it if there is actually a price on carbon. And so that's what a CBAM would do. It would incentivize solutions. It would incentivize collaboration. And I think that's really got to start with Foreign Minister Penny Wong stepping up and playing a key role. And so that's why I really like the Future Made in Australia. It's all about a whole of a government approach where the defense minister is bringing in national security, where the foreign minister is bringing in the need for collaboration with our key trade partners. The climate and energy minister is bringing in the decarbonisation of the domestic market. Minister mm-hmm. Husic is bringing in the need for manufacturing supply chain security. And probably most equally important as Minister Wong, the trade minister really needs to step up and drive the price signal. And so that to me is a whole of government approach. That's the real, I think, the enabling thing. So I'm pushing for a Asian CBAM, a price on carbon emissions.
Right, right. Okay. And to wrap our discussion together, what do you see is the future of clean energy in Australia? Are we on the right path?
I think we're finally moving in the right direction. We've got to get through the next federal election. Otherwise, we're going to spend 20 years trying to build a nuclear reactor for $50 billion, and then we'll build three of them, so $150 billion. You know, we're going to waste two more decades, delay, mm-hmm. denial, disinformation, outright serving the fossil fuel industry of Australia. We can't underestimate the power of the fossil fuel industry, the incumbent industry. But I hope that the Albanese government gets re-elected, ideally, in my view, with a minority government, so that we have the Teals and the Greens lifting their ambition and driving credibility, making sure that the methane gas industry doesn't continue to undermine the credibility of the Australian government the way they did with their future gas strategy. And so I think renewable energy is going to be absolutely core. So I would be hoping that we'll look back in a decade from now and realise Australia's invested upwards of $100 billion in firmed renewable energy, really low cost, mm-hmm. zero emissions energy. probably $50 billion investment in the grid transmission system that we need to mobilise that, and then $100 billion in value-added refineries across Australia, so we're exporting embodied decarbonisation. And it was brilliant to see last week Treasury put out an ambition statement, but also numbers around why they are supporting the future made in Australia. And they say Australia could easily be the lowest cost source of renewable energy in the world by 2030. And that then underpins the argument why a lot of traditional economists are wrong by saying we're moving away from competitive advantage. I think we're racing straight towards our number one competitive advantage, which is low cost, zero emissions, renewable energy firmed and delivered through embodied decarbonisation to our trade partners. And that is the ultimate competitive advantage that could really reorient and stimulate sustained economic growth for Australia. And so it's a story of hope. It's a story of investment. It's a story of regional employment. And all of that is far, far better to sell politically than fear and division and disinformation, which is what the other mob's offering.
Well, Tim, thank you so much for your time today. Where can people find you and find Climate Energy Finance?
Thanks for having me, Rosemary. We are, as I mentioned, a public interest think tank. All of our research is available online for free at climateenergyfinance.org and also on LinkedIn. I'm a rather prolific op-ed writer on LinkedIn and I love to engage with people. So if you challenge me, I will hopefully respond and we'll have a good civilized debate about what are the solutions. And there are pros and cons and everything. Happy to have an informed debate. So I look forward to that online. And thanks very much for having me.
Thank you, Tim. I'm Rosemary Petrus, and that's a wrap for today.
The Green Away podcast is a product of FS Sustainability, a show about people, the planet, and investing in our collective future. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. The Greener Way podcast gives listeners access to information and educational content provided by discussing numerous financial sustainable options and our featured guests. It is not intended as a substitute for professional, legal, or tax advice. The hosts of The Greener Way are not financial professionals and are not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Before making any financial decisions, you should read the product disclosure statement and, if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the FS Sustainability website, fssustainability.com.au.